Okay, so what we did on the way here was, I think, relatively uncontroversial, in the sense that, right, even though we maybe don't think about it too much, right, that there was an actual vote and there was a history in which it wasn't obvious what things were a hard value offer and the like. At the end of the day, I don't think it's controversial because, you know, the Gemara says there was a vote. So, like, a careful reader of the Gemara tells you that there were different stages in history. So the fact that we find in the Book of Maccabees that there was, in fact, a development, right, even if surprising, and maybe if we didn't quite internalize the simple read of the Mishnah, of the, sorry, of the Gemara, it's also controversial. But I'll point to two other examples, okay? So first of all, this one's a little bit more controversial, but the Gemara says as follows. Gemara says, Nivamo, the Tashma Amri Relazar Ben Yaakov, Shamati Shebeit in Makin Ve'onshen, Shoam in HaTorah. So there's a very extensive sugya there of all the different times when Chazal are allowed to break the Torah, either through Akirat Avram in HaTorah or extrajudicial punishments. So he said, I hear that Beis Din is allowed to punish, not according to the Torah, not to break the Torah, because sometimes you need to break the Torah in order to make a fence around the Torah. There was once a time that, in the time of the Greeks, that they found someone riding a horse on Shabbat, and they stoned him, right, like Chilul Shabbat. Lo mibnei she'ra'ui l'kach, not because that's what he deserved, ela she'ashas v'chal l'kach, but the time needed it. V'shuv ma'aseh ba'adam echad she'etiach v'yishto tachad ha'te'ina, and there was a man who slept with his wife, his own wife, under a fig tree, but in plain view, right? And they brought him to Beit Din and they beat him, right? They gave him Malkut. Lo mibnei she'ra'ui l'kach. Not because that's what he actually deserved, but because they needed, what? And the Gemara says, because Migdar Milta is shiny, and the Gemara says that doesn't necessarily prove it, because that's what we call Migdar Milta, which is to protect the yeah, whatever. Yes, right, and right. The Gemara tells this as well in Sanhedrin. Now, at first glance, there's nothing surprising about this, right? There is something surprising about it, but, right, you just say, okay, if you take the Gemara at face value, you'd say, well, you know, they're giving an example, and this is something that everyone agrees is not a chiyuv mita, but they once gave someone a chiyuv mita because, whatever, the circumstances warranted it, and then you have to justify that mechanism. However, what some historians have noted is that that may be part of the story, but it happens to be that there were other non-rabbinic groups in the time of Chazal who we know thought that riding a horse on Shabbat, right? We, right, rabbinically, why do we say that riding a horse on Shabbat is aser? What? Because it's a gzeira that they might break a branch, right? That's how Chazal understand it. But there were other groups in the time of in the ancient world who thought that it was a malacha, that riding an animal on Shabbat was a malacha. So it's possible, right, that what some academics have suggested is what's going on here is that what the Gemara is remembering, right, was a group, a court, who paskened like a non-rabbinic interpretation, right, and therefore had thought it, that riding a horse on Shabbat was a malacha, right? But then when the rabbis are incorporating it back into their tradition, right, they say, well, that wasn't the law. Right? So if it happened, it happened because Migdar Milta. Right? It was extrajudicial. Right? So sometimes, this is a bit more controversial because what you're saying here is that sometimes, right, Chazal themselves are integrating traditions that originally meant something else. Right? And then once Chazal paskened something, right, and the other traditions fell out, right, Chazal sometimes find a way of incorporating it back in. Okay. That's speculation, but that is what many have suggested about this. The last example
how do we know it's not the other way around, where they did it, where it was the actual rabbi killed him, but they did it to show the sedukim, that it was an important thing?
No, because we know that there were other groups that it was a malacha. No, but they thought it was a malacha. And we knew that there were people in the time who thought it was a malacha. Right?
I thought it wasn't anything at all.
Were there? I don't know. Why do you think that? The Stukim, okay, what the Stukim actually held is much more complicated than that. Okay, meaning they had a version of Shabbat, and it wasn't identical to us, but it's simply saying they didn't believe in Torah Sheba'al Peh is an oversimplification of what their view was, right? It's more complex than that. They had their own exegesis. They had their own traditions of sorts, right? They're not the same as the Karaites, right? The Karaites, yes. Meaning the Karaites more explicitly have a... Okay. The Karaites more explicitly tradition, have a more of a sola scriptura tradition than the Stukim do, right? Meaning that you only follow scripture, right? Not necessarily that Stukim are the exact same, even though the Karaites themselves, if you look on their website nowadays, will say, we are not Sadducees, but we do claim to be the spiritual heirs of the Sadducees.
Do they have a website?
Yes, yeah. They do. Yes, they do. The Karaites have it. I looked it up in their introduction. That is what they said. Yes, it's very interesting. Okay. Fine. So one more example, and now we move from the Hanukkah one to the Shemitah example that I wanted to give you. Okay? And sometimes what we have are records of traditions that do not appear anywhere in Chazal, right? So sometimes, right, the first example we saw was a case where an external source like Maccabees gives you a historical example of what is already seems to be present in the Gemara itself. Right, the Gemara itself says there was a vote in which they decided what the cardinal sins were, right? And you see in practice that happening in Maccabees. The second example we gave was one where the Gemara is remembering a scene, right, which, according to the Gemara, is part of the rabbinic framework, right? It's part of extrajudicial punishment, which the rabbis allow to do. But possibly, knowing history, it might be that what they're remembering is actually a different tradition and then reincorporating it in. But the third example is one where there were traditions in that other Jews kept that has zero resonance in any Chazal tradition. And therefore, it's just important to understand that sometimes it has no resonance, but there were paths that could have been taken and were taken by some Jews, right, but were, in this sense, very much not taken by rabbinic Jews, and this one is about Shemitah. So, as you know, right, from Shemitah, what is prohibited? Malachot. And we will start talking about that soon and getting to Malacha, right? What exactly is Azar, Zmira, Chareid, Choresh, Zomer, Choresh, etc. Right, and you get that in Vayikra Chavhei. However, you could see conceptually how you might do something else, because what is Shemitah consistently compared to throughout Chumash, as we saw, Shabbat. Now, I know of no source that takes it all the way in saying, therefore, all malacha, whatever is prohibited on Shabbat, is usher on Shemitah. What? Right there. But there apparently was a tradition that it did have a certain similarity to Shabbat, namely that there was an isser to go to war. And just like we found a unique isser to go to war on Shabbat that you had in these, right, or maybe it was a function of it not being Har Gvaliah Avar, they actually find this in ancient sources about Shemitah as well. So if you look, for example, in Josephus, in the Antiquities of the Jews, he quotes, he says, when he's talking about Hyrcanus receives the high priesthood and ejects Ptolemy out of the country, Antiochus makes war against Hyrcanus and afterwards makes a league with him. So he said, so Ptolemy retired to one of the fortresses above Jericho, which is called Dagon, da-da-da-da.
He retired to Grin.
And then he said, and so he thought that so far as he relaxed as the siege is taking of the place, so much favor did he show to those that were dearest to him by preventing their misery. His zeal about it was cooled. However, his mother spread out her hands and begged of him that he would not grow remiss on her account, but indulged indignation so much the more, and they would do his utmost to take the place quickly in order to get the enemy under his power, da da da. Now when his mother said so, he resolved to take the fortress immediately, but when he saw her beaten and torn to pieces, his courage failed him, and he could not but sympathize. The mother suffered and was thereby overcome. And as the siege was drawn into the length by this mean, that year on which the Jews used to rest can't come on, right? So Ptolemy basically was afraid to fight the Jews because he'd lost in one of his battles. Right, but he wanted to take revenge. So what did he do? He waited several years until Shemitah for the Jews observed this rest every seventh year. As they do every seventh day, so that Ptolemy being for this caused release from the war, he slew the brethren of Hyrcanus and his mother, and when he had done so, he fled to Zeno, which was called Cotylus, who was then the tyrant of the city Philadelphia. Right, so you see that not only, right, was there a tradition that you couldn't fight on Shabbat, but apparently at least that aspect of it, a prohibition against war, was even on Shemitah, and also had this idea that, you know, even if, right, you're going to die because of it, right, some sort of Yehar Gval Yavor apparently applied there also, and you find this as well in the war scroll in Qumran. In the war scroll of Qumran, it says that during the remaining 33 years of the war, the men of renown, Qumran, right? Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? So the Dead Sea Scrolls are a group. We don't know exactly who they were. Some used to think that they were the Essenes, but it seems not. It seems like they're a different group. So we'll just call them the Qumranites, the people at Qumran. Yes, Zach. There were people who have all types of theories who they are. We don't really know who they are, but whoever the group was at Qumran, okay? So one of the scrolls that we found there is called the War Scroll. And there it says, right, those called the congregation, all the heads of the congregation's clans shall choose for themselves men of war for all the lands of the nations. From all the tribes of Israel they shall prepare capable men for themselves to go out for battle according to the summons of the war, year by year. But during the years of remission they shall not ready men to go out for battle, for it is a Sabbath of rest for Israel. Right, so again, here you see, and this is, right, this is really a case of the path not taken, right? Where, right, unlike the other two, where you see from these external sources background to what to change is actually happening, and Chazal themselves attest to, maybe, right, in different ways, right? Chazal talk about a vote, right? In Maccabees, you see there was actually a machloket. But here, what you see is, right, other traditions that existed that were not rabbinic, very much not rabbinic, and it's an example. Right, not necessarily, this is not an example of change within the rabbinic tradition, but rather just reminds you how much there were radically different views floating around of what Torah was amongst other Jewish groups, and that Chazal are very clearly taking a path forward, which does, in this case, does not overlap with them. So that was the last example I wanted to show you. In each of these, what I wanted to show you is, like I said, in the first case, in the case of Yehar Gval Yavor, it's a very clear example that external sources help us understand when Chazal say there was a vote, that it really means there was a vote. Like, there really was a time when there was a live machloket about this, right? About what was Yehar Gval Yavor, could you fight on Shabbos even if it meant your life, and the like. And that's what we saw in Maccabees when compared to Gemara and Sanhedrin and Yoma, which again, there, what we know from Maccabees really does accord with what we know from Chazal. Because Chazal already tell us that there was a machlokes and a vote and a moment at which it changed. Then the second type of case we saw is one where Chazal attests to extra legal issues, where you have to at least raise the question, if we know that there were other traditions at the time who actually believed that that was the straight halacha, so how does that affect the way we think about it? Right? Do we just say, well, there were people who thought that riding horses is malacha and Chazal didn't and there was extra judicial, or do we say that this is evidence of the fact that Chazal were in conversation with these communities and the communities were enough part of the community that there could have been a confusion at some point, right? Whether you were doing something because it was a malacha or you're doing something for extra legal reasons. And the third example we took was something where Chazal don't entertain it at all, but you have to remember that Chazal are living in a context where there were other paths that could have been taken for halacha, specifically the case of Shemitah, where just like we saw by Shabbat, there were people who thought not only was war usher on Shabbat, but it was usher even if it meant your life. Apparently, the same thing was true of all of Shemitah, according, and you have this in the tradition of Qumran, and you have it in Josephus already. So that's a third, or an example, of, again, of a halacha not taken by Chazal, but definitely where, and you can possibly imagine, right, in theory, but we have no evidence of this, something like Matityahu, right, where there was a decision to change course, or you could say that this one was so outside the consensus Chazal were part of it, this one they didn't even entertain, even though the other one, right, was very clearly in Machloket, where Chazal actually explicitly made the decision by Shabbat. By Shemitah, who knows, right, again, we have zero resonance zero resonance of this. But those...
Can we say that the part has been changed by human form?
So therefore, I think it's fair to say that the Torah has changed how it's been practiced and poskened. That doesn't mean it's not built into the system. It just means that the system itself has mechanisms for change, and those have been taken advantage of. So when you say, has the Torah changed, I think it depends what you mean by change, right? You don't have to say the system changed, but details obviously were subject to dispute, and there are mechanisms in place that changed, and those are just three examples. And like I said, because Ellie asked it yesterday, and because much of the sources here are both about Shemitah and in the Book of Maccabees, so since we're learning Shviat and going into
Chanukah,
I figured it was as good a time as ever to do a little bit of an out-of-the-box shir, and we were walking the whole time, a walking shir. So, shkoyach, guys.